This is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on community and independent radio stations nationwide. It's been just under 60 years since Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. gave his iconic I Have a Dream speech at the March on Washington for Jobs and Freedom. King noted that Black Americans live, quote, on a lonely island of poverty in the midst of a vast ocean of material prosperity. While there have been gains made since 1963 on the question of closing the racial wealth gap, there is still a long way to go. A new report released jointly by the Institute for Policy Studies and the National Community Reinvestment Coalition finds that without policy interventions, it could take African Americans more than 500 more years to achieve economic parity with whites. My guest is Diedrich Asante Mohammed, Chief of Race, Wealth and Community for the National Community Reinvestment Coalition and lead author of the new report, Still a Dream, Over 500 Years to Black Economic Equality. Welcome to the program, Diedrich.
Thanks for having me on.
So let's first talk about the progress that has been made. There has been a little bit of progress that your report outlines in terms of economic equality. What are those gains?
Sure. I think, you know, one of the things that I found most interesting trying to look back at what was the economic conditions of African Americans back in 63 or in the 60s. And in 1963, when Dr. King was giving his keynote address on the March on Washington for Jobs and Freedom, the Black poverty rate was 51%. So the majority, slight majority of African Americans were living in poverty. And for whites, it was 15%. And so we understand why economics was so central to the message that Dr. King was putting forth in 63 and definitely was the focus of his work by the time of his assassination in 68. And, you know, we saw that coming out of the March on Washington, there was a legislation put forward around what was called the War on Poverty, Lyndon Johnson's War on Poverty, that really was motivated by the Black Freedom Movement of the 1950s and 60s. And we saw a dramatic decrease of poverty going down to about 32% for African Americans. So just in those 6 years, we saw a massive decrease. And today, we see African American poverty at around 20%, which is still a high number. It's still one out of five, but it's still significantly lower than where we were during the time of the March on Washington for Jobs and Freedom.
So let's talk about where things need to improve. Over 500 years to Black economic equality is the subtitle to the report, which I suppose says it all. How do you measure the issue of equality? Because there's income, there's wealth, there's educational achievement, there's access to housing. What are your measures?
Yeah, well, you know, let's talk about education for a second, because that also is a space where we've seen some improvement. We've seen African-American high school graduation rates about equal whites today. It was much different in the 60s. In the 60 years ago, only about 25% of African-Americans graduated from high school. In 2022, it's 90%. And we've even seen some bridging of college attainment. In the time of 1962, white Americans were about 2.4 times more likely to have a college degree than blacks. In 2022, whites were 1.7 times more likely than blacks to have a college degree. So there still is, a distinct difference. African Americans about 28% of college attainment rate, while whites have around a 38. But we have seen a slow bridging. So we have seen some improvements as it relates to education, but we haven't seen that rate of improvement in terms of income and wealth.
So let's talk about that. There's the issue of how we look at income and wealth, both in terms of salary and compensation, and then wealth that is sort of passed down, right, from generation to generation.
Yeah.
And those things are different. And there, especially on the issue of wealth, white Americans have a distinct advantage that you can directly trace back historically, right?
Well, I oftentimes note that originally black people, African Americans were brought here to literally be the wealth of whites. and to create more wealth for whites. So the racial wealth divide is literally a foundation of this country, and it's not just African-Americans. Obviously, the land upon which this country was built upon was taken from the Native Americans. So the racial wealth divide really has been foundational to the country, and it's something that we have not, you know, seriously addressed, right? And in terms of African-Americans, we know that African-Americans had about 58 cents on every dollar of wealth in 1967. And then in 2021, there was a report by a Professor Darren Court that noted African-Americans had around 62 cents on every dollar of wealth that whites had. So at that, 58 cents on every dollar of income and 62 cents on every dollar of income in 2022.
58 versus 62, rate, which is extremely tiny increase.
That's right. That's right. It was, in 60 years, the increase, we bridged 4 cents of income inequality. I didn't get to wealth yet, income inequality. And at that rate, it would take a little over 500 years for African Americans to reach income equality with whites. So I think it's important to know, with a decrease in poverty, with increases in education, and with, I will agree, I think personal prejudice is less than it was in the 60s. But even with all of that, we've seen very minimal income equality, and it would take, again, over 500 years for African Americans to have income equality. Now, if we go to wealth, it's even worse. In 1962, African Americans had around 12 cents for every dollar of wealth of non-Black Americans. And by 2019, they had 18 cents for every dollar of wealth of non-Black Americans. So not even a fifth of the wealth. And at this rate, it would take 780 years for Black wealth to equal non-Black wealth. So we see that the country really is not on any type of path toward racial equality. And I always say the foundation of racial inequality is racial economic inequality. And the foundation of racial economic inequality is the racial wealth divide. So I think it is very important that we focus in on bridging this wealth inequality if we want to get past the racial inequality the country struggled with since its founding.
What about housing? Housing is not only an important measure of how people are sustaining themselves from day to day, but generational wealth gets built by being able to pour money into an asset that tends to appreciate in value.
Wealth is the majority. Home ownership is the majority, is where the majority of wealth lies for most Americans. And we've seen really no bridging of home ownership inequality. Black home ownership rate in 1960 was 38%. By 2021, it was 44%. So it did move up 6%. But white home ownership was 64% in 1960 and increased to 74% in 2021. So in these 60 years, whites have increased by 10 percentage points. Blacks have only increased by 6 percentage points. So I think it's also interesting to note, the Black home ownership of today, 44%, is still substantially lower than home ownership for whites in 1960. So we are not seeing progress in home ownership differences.
Is there something about how educational parity, especially K through 12, graduation rates, we were saying where there has been the biggest gain made, is there some lesson there that can be applied to housing, that can be applied to income? I mean, we have education is a terrain where there's been so many political battles fought, but by and large, it seems as though our K through 12 public education system has served to, to close the racial gap. How can we apply that to other realms?
In terms of educational attainment, I think, I'm sure there are many people who dive further down in education and note that there are still stronger schools in predominantly white areas and what have you. But I will think a lesson that could be taken is public education is obviously a public good. And that is something that really can be more distributed. And I think there's more work to be done in terms of public education and in terms of creating greater opportunity, educational opportunity for Blacks and for people in low wealth communities. But I think it is gonna require that type of mass public effort, right? So it's gonna be, majority of whites didn't become homeowners not because of some market forces, but they became majority homeowners with the GI Bill, with the restructuring of the mortgage, with federal government backing of mortgages. The GI Bill, you know, would have a 0% a down payment for loans. So I think that type of mass government investment, creating public goods, strengthening maybe public colleges, community colleges, these types of things, I think provides much greater opportunity for greater equality and greater opportunity.
So let's talk about those policy recommendations. And this is a perfect segue, because government intervention and really making our government do the things that are just the direct pathways toward racial economic equality seem to be the way to go, right? Our politicians like to use things like tax credits and subsidies and incentives that we know just haven't worked. So what would direct government intervention to address the racial economic wealth gap look like? Let's go through the recommendations that your report outlines.
Sure. You know, one of the big policies that are being talked about more and more, and that has been implemented at the state level in a few states, is this baby bond program, which is really the way to kind of increase individual assets. So the idea is that in Connecticut just recently passed this legislation, and where all children who qualify for Medicaid are given, I believe, I might be off on this, but I believe it's a $3,000 bond when they're born. And then that, you know, accumulates until they're able to take the bond out, which I think is, you know, between the ages like 18 and 30 or something like that. And then it's estimated that that bond could be worth anywhere from somewhere $14,000 to $24,000. So the idea is that actually, that young people coming from low income, low wealth communities will now have an asset, financial asset they can use to help them, you know, and the money can only be used for like wealth building. So it could be for education, skill development, home ownership, small business. So again, giving assets to individuals, young adult individuals, and so they can, you know, start moving forward economically in their life. So that's something that's being discussed at the federal level. Cory Booker has put forth legislation, hasn't been a pass, but Washington, D.C. and Connecticut are just starting individual baby bond programs that, again, you know, we won't see the assets come to fruition for another 18 years, but they're starting the investments now.
Tell me about the recommendation for full employment and guaranteed jobs that Still a Dream, your report, outlines.
Yeah, I mean, you know, up until maybe about 20 years ago, African American unemployment was generally at around double-digit numbers, and so it's hard to have, you know, it's almost impossible to have strong income and strong wealth without strong employment. And white Americans really have been seeing full employment outside of deep recessions, pretty regularly, right? Oftentimes, full employment has been estimated around 4%. With the recognition that, you know, there's always some people leaving a job, some people in transition, so there's going to be some percentage of people out of work. And regularly, white unemployment has been below this level, around 3%. So how can we get African Americans, who hit a record low of about 6% a few months ago, it has gone up a little bit since then, how can we get African American unemployment at zero? And actually, why not have the whole country at zero unemployment? And we think, you know, the best way forward on that is creating, it would be government subsidies and outright government jobs, maybe government subsidies for small businesses or some different types of public works, or direct government jobs for public works. So there's opportunities for all people to get into the workforce, start bringing in some income, and think that would really strengthen particularly, low wealth communities.
And then we are also looking at solutions like land and home ownership, and also just helping African Americans build up wealth And then my favorite, reparations. So let's go through some of these specific interventions. You know, you pointed out that there was a time in this country where white Americans literally had or treated black people as their wealth, right? So to compensate for that now, there has been a push for reparations at the state level here in California, where I am, and other smaller efforts as well. So what do you recommend?
And just right before I get into reparations, I will just note, as you did mention, housing.
Yes.
There has been some progressive legislation put forward, the American Housing and Economic Mobility Act, which would put hundreds of billions of dollars in affordable home development, also in subsidizing home ownership. So I do think, you know, we are going to need a massive increase, particularly for blacks and Latinos as well, and Native Americans who are, blacks and Latinos aren't even 50% homeowners. So you'll need some type of massive federal legislation, investment, and subsidy in order to deal with that home ownership. But now let's do talk about reparations. And I do note that reparations is probably the most cost-effective, efficient way of dealing with the racial wealth divide. You know, I'm all for some of these larger universal programs, but obviously the more people you add to them, the more they cost, right? And so if we want to, you know, get rid of poverty for all Americans, can understand that, let's do that. We'll do full employment for all Americans. I understand that, let's do that. But let's also not lose sight that we really do need to focus on the black, white, racial wealth divide, racial economic inequality. And I think one of the strongest ways to focus in on that is something like reparations that would focus in on African Americans. And do believe that, you know, I believe state and local programs can be helpful in modeling and providing some type of investment. But to really bridge black-white economic inequality, we really are going to need a federal program that would do this. And it would probably have to be a holistic program that didn't just, you know, that might provide baby bonds, particularly for African Americans, might provide, probably we need to provide some type of subsidy for higher education, or maybe outright free community college or state college attendance for African Americans. You know, I think it should be a mix of government programs that are provided aimed at our community, as well as investments that allow individual black households to invest and strengthen their own economic outcome. And you know, I think the first step to that is to get Congress to agree on having a national committee to discuss what reparations could look like for African Americans, as was done in California. Even though California has had that committee and has put out the report, but they haven't actually started distributing funds, you know, as part of a, and I would call it more, I call reparations for national. I would call what California's done is more of a bill of repair. California's attempt to participate in the repair of economic harm put on the African American community. I think, you know, more bills of repair are also important.
And it seems to me, Diedrich, that when we talk about things like reparations, that is the difference between pursuing equity versus equality, right? You get the universal programs may offer equality, but how do they compensate for hundreds of years of systemic built-in inequality?
Yeah, you know, and I also would note that, you know, we can have universal programs and include African Americans in them, but all that means is we're not doing what we used to do in the past and exclude African Americans from programs that were for everyone. If we do want to recognize the distinct injury put upon the African American community historically and today, then that is when you need something like reparations, right? I mean, we have had reparations for communities in the past. You know, the most famous example within the United States is, you know, some, you know, small amount of reparations for Japanese Americans who were put in internment camps during World War II. And again, you know, that was a targeted particular policy. And I think, you know, once again, we should have that if the country really wants to, you know, say they want to get beyond racial inequality, they really do want to recognize the inequality and damage done, then we actually need to pay for that. And that's something Dr. King talked much about. He said it was one thing to take down colored and white from water fountains. It was another thing to invest the billions of dollars needed to actually repair the harm.
Give out a website, Diedrich, where people can find out more about the report that you've authored and examine those policy recommendations.
Sure. They can check out www.ncrc.org. That's an organization I work for. We have partnered with the Institute for Policy Studies, and they have economic inequality website called inequality.org that I also would highly recommend that, you know, will give good information about the various work we're all doing on greater economic equity as a whole. And this report, still a dream of 500 years to Black economic equality as well.
And we'll link directly to the report from our website as well. Diedrich, thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, thanks for having me.
My guest has been Diedrich Asante Muhammad, Chief of Race, Wealth, and Community for the National Community Reinvestment Coalition, lead author of the new report we've just been discussing, Still a Dream, Over 500 Years to Black Economic Equality. It's been nearly 60 years since Dr. King gave his famous I Have a Dream speech. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. You can access this and other interviews on our website, risingupwithsonali.com, by becoming a subscriber. Find our audio podcast on iTunes and Spotify, and follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at RU with Sonali.